It's Saturday morning in Italy, and you're listening to the Magic Towns Italy podcast.
Today we're here with Tim Epstein. He's a very well-known person in the expats in Italy community. And we thought we'd do something different for this podcast because for the first time, we are interviewing someone who has actually chosen to leave Italy behind. And we would actually like to know from Tim himself, but maybe Tim, we can tell us a little bit about how you came to Italy before we talk about how you left Italy.
Good afternoon. Buongiorno. Okay. So I'm a dual citizen. I'm a citizen of Australia and I'm a citizen of the United Kingdom, but I'm not an EU citizen. And until Brexit happened, I was an EU citizen and I could travel freely all over Europe. And that's why I moved to the UK 20-something years ago, because I love traveling. It's my passion. And I've been traveling to Italy for 25 years to Lago di Garda, to Lake Garda. So what happened 10 years ago, there was the vote on Brexit and it was negative. And I made a decision then to quit my career, my background as an IT architect, working in London, really good money. And I decided to walk away for that and get a new life and move to Italy. And I've been going to Lake Garda for 20 years. I knew it like the back of my hand. So it was obvious that was to find a place in Lake Garda. And I love people. I love hospitality. So I wanted to find a nice villa near the lake with a swimming pool and be the host for guests and make that my new life. Mm. And that's what I did. So I quit my job and I moved to Italy in 2018 before the deadline. And as a pre-Brexit UK citizen, you have permanent residency right in Italy. So I didn't have to get a visa or anything like that. I could stay there after the Brexit deadline.
You didn't have to get a driver's license. I mean, you had it easy compared to me.
Exactly. I had it very easy. It's actually possible to do a direct exchange of UK license. So no neo patente. I didn't have to go down the neo patente route. So it was easy.
What attracted you to this corner of Italy, particularly, by the way? You were on the Lombardy side of Lake Garda, right?
Yes. Yes, I'm on the western or Lombardia side of Lake Garda. So when I was much younger and had hair about 30 years ago, I was backpacking around Europe and I met this Italian girl in Berlin. She was learning German and she was from the Lombardy side of Lake Garda, a small town called Corbano. And I stayed with her for the summer holidays and I got to know the lake area. So when I made the decision to go to Lake Garda, I decided to stay in that side. Also, the tax on the property and the IVA is lesser in Lombardia than in Veneto. So that's the other reason I made that decision, is that the Comune taxes are less. And it's, if you're running an Airbnb, there was less tax as well. So,
and property prices are also generally a little bit lower on the Lombardy side, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. I bought a beautiful 300 square meter villa with a swimming pool and a hot tub and fully air conditioned and four levels, and it's luxury. And that would have cost millions in Veneto. And I got it for a lot less than that in Lombardy.
Good for you. So how was life over there? Were you happy? Did you enjoy yourself?
Yes, very much. You know, living the Dolce Vita, living on a postcard. I mean, it is absolutely gorgeous, Lake Garda. And where I am, it's just beautiful in Toscolano, Maderno, because it's open. It's not like the rest of the lake where there's no parking. It's very crowded. It's not at the side of the mountain. There's an open space in the town, which is lovely. And I love the culture and I love the people there. And, you know, I love cycling as well. I cycled around the lake in a day when I was a bit fitter than I am now. So I enjoy the cycling. And also it's below the Garda Alta National Park as well. So if you want to go hiking, it's not just the lake. You have the mountains as well.
Yeah. I agree with you. As you know, I'm a Veneto native and resident, and I think that's really what we have in this part of Italy. Nature is great, and there's a great variety of it. And if you're an avid hiker, like I am, there is no shortage of options for you to stretch your legs over hundreds of miles or so. I'm a huge fan. And you say that you also found the people nice and welcoming. I mean, none of those Northern Italy stereotypes.
Exactly. I was quite surprised because I assumed, because I was living in this beautiful villa, that they would go, oh, he's a he's a stranieri. We don't want to have anything to do with him. You know, he's not part of our community. But I was actually accepted by my neighbors, and, you know, the neighbors across the road, they're growing the capperi, the fruit, and they bought me the fruit and bought me the food and bought me gifts. And I felt very, very welcomed by my neighbors. Oh, it was lovely. And also just a little story, the house I have, it has the olive trees. It has three on the street and then two, and they're very big. They're almost 100 years old. And at the end of the first year, the neighbor came and he trimmed them. He cut the trees in return for taking all the olives on the net. And he made about 50 liters of olive oil and bought me bottles of some of the olive oil for myself. So
that was a great deal.
And then for my guests, I put the label on it and said, this olive was made here on my property, this olive oil. And that's a very Italian thing. I love that. It was fantastic.
That is so nice. And on the language side, did you learn Italian?
I did. I've always struggled with language, though, unfortunately. You know, I do speak Italian, but it's like A2 kind of level, B1. It's not fluent. It's fine for normal conversation. But the problem is when you're dealing with the comune in bureaucracy or Agenzia della Entrata, commercialist, notaio, oh my God, I need a translator. I need someone to help me with all of the, and that's something else we can talk about, all the bureaucracy of Italy. My language just isn't good enough to cope and I get very stressed with it. But the language is okay for, you know, social interaction, informal interaction.
So you integrated as well as you could expect, like in a handful of years. And of course, you had the usual run-ins with the Italian bureaucracy.
Exactly.
And maybe we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
But it really sounds like you had a dream life. You had no regrets, right? You didn't think about leaving at all.
Absolutely. This was a shock. I didn't expect to be leaving. And we'll talk about that a bit later. But no, I was settled. You know, I was there 8 years. I was 2 years away from getting my citizenship, because if you're a permanent resident for 10 years as a non-EU citizen, if you pass a language exam, you can then apply for citizenship. And unfortunately, I've lost that because it has to be continuous. So
what happened? Why did Italy lose you?
Well, what happened is that I'm now over 55 years of age, which means I'm entitled to access my UK private pension. I wanted to do that. I bought myself a nice Tesla electric car because I'm a greenie. And my only income was from the Airbnb, the villa, which wasn't really enough. So I started making withdrawals from my pension. And I did it stupidly without getting professional advice before I did that. I just assumed I'd pay the tax in the UK and that was it. Because in the UK, the first 25% that you withdraw is completely tax-free, zero. It doesn't even count. It's just like considered to be returned capital. It's not even income. And then in the UK, the first £12,500, which is about 15,000 euro, tax-free. So my tax at the end of the year was very little, but I had to send my UK tax return to my commercialista and he said, nope. Every euro, every penny of your UK income is charged as income in Italy. There's no exception. So that was added to my tax on top of my Italian income from the rental. And that was a killer. I think last year, I mean, I was getting like more than 20,000 euro tax. And that's like almost my net income for all of Italy. So my tax was, wasn't sustainable anymore. I couldn't stay there. And I made the mistake of not getting advice. And unfortunately, I had no choice. I had to leave.
Was there no way to, I don't know, reason with the tax man? Was there anything that could have been done to prevent this?
Well, I now know because I did the research too late. But what a lot of people do now is that they cash in their private pension from the UK before they move to Italy.
Yeah.
And then reinvest it in an Italian pension plan. And if they do that and move the money to Italy and put it in an Italian plan, then there is the tax benefit regime of having a private pension in Italy. So that would have been an option, but it was too late for me. I didn't do my homework.
So the clock started ticking. After this happened, you knew you had to leave the country.
Yeah, unfortunately. And also on the Airbnb, it's very expensive running the villa because it's air conditioned and it's huge. And the cost of electricity in England's a lot. I was getting like 500 euro a month in summer electricity bills. and everything was a tax deduction. And then the Italian government 2 years ago said, nope, if you own an Airbnb, it's what's called SECO, which means we charge you 21% tax up front and you cannot claim any expenses. Every single expense, the internet, gas, electricity, the washing, the cleaning, everything had to be from my net income. And so the combination of the change in the tax on my income and then the tax on my UK foreign income, it was just too much. So the only choice was to stop being an Italian tax resident. And as you know, Luca, I was in a hurry because if you're in Italy for more than 183 days in a year, you're automatically tax resident. I had to leave by the end of June this year. I had no choice.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say about the Airbnb. We wrote a couple of articles about this. Yeah, I have one myself. In fact, I run a couple of those. And the tax regime, that flat tax regime that you're talking about, the 21%, is one option. And of course, you don't get any deductions, just as you said. So some people think, oh, it's only 21%, but then you have to shell out every single euro of expenses out of your own pocket, and you don't get to claim back VAT either. So I personally run it on a, you know, as an entrepreneur, so you don't get the flat tax. You have, of course, to pay tax on progressive rates, but I find that by the time you take away all the costs and the VAT, et cetera, it actually works better. I would say that the takeaway from this is that if you're thinking of opening a Airbnb or a B&B or a holiday home in Italy, you should get well advised before you start so that you get the most optimal treatment. So anyway, that must have come as a huge disappointment to you. And what did you do then? Just pack up, say bye to everyone?
Well, this was a year ago that I realized that I got the tax bill last year, which I had to pay. So that immediately started the clock ticking. And so I've actually started putting the house on the market at the end of last year, but real estate in Italy is very, very slow. It still hasn't sold yet. And I expected that. It was on the market for 2 years before I bought it. So I know that because most people in Italy, they hand the properties down to their children. It's not like people live somewhere for 5 years and sell. The culture is very, very different. People in Italy buy a house for life. So I knew that it wouldn't sell quickly. So yeah, I had no option. I had to put the house on the market. I'm still hoping to sell it as a business. So it's completely furnished. Everything's there. The pizza oven and the beds and the TVs and the kitchen, it's ready to go. So I am hoping that someone will buy it that wants to have it completely furnished and ready to go. So,
well, maybe one of our listeners will. In fact, we'll put the link to your property in the show notes. What was the actual experience of running a business, hospitality business? How did you find it? Was it rewarding? You're an IT person.
Yes. So it was rewarding. I had friends helping me, but there's a lot of bureaucracy, red tape, because you have to apply for a license, first of all, for the property. And then there's the imposta di soggiorno, the tourist tax. And then you have to register with the Polizia di Stato to register the guests with the police. And then there's the Turismo Authority. And I have to register every guest in three different systems and get the licenses. And that took a couple of months, but we got there eventually. And once that was out of the way, then it was very straightforward. I did the listing and I'm quite proud. I got, you know, 5 stars and it was very good because I set very high standards and I love taking care of the guests. About 80% of my guests were German, which is very interesting because I'm on the western side of the lake and they all come down through from Germany. So it's interesting that the most of my guests.
It's actually the same on the side too. I find that maybe 60% of our guests are German. And then back in the time when I went to high school, basically everyone would take German as a second language. Because, you know, it's like German land. We have the spas in Abano. We have the art cities. So anyway, I'm sorry to say that my 5 years of German amounted to very, very little. But everyone speaks English nowadays anyway. Apart from these kind of little bureaucracy snags at the beginning, I mean, you're a hugely helpful person. And I actually met you via the Experts in Italy Facebook group. I don't know how many hours a day you were answering people's queries. It was basically a job. I think it would be very helpful to get some of your wisdom.
Okay.
From having helped hundreds of people through your comments and posts. What do you think people do wrong when they move to Italy?
So the first thing that people do wrong is they take their culture with them. If you want to live in an expat community where everyone speaks your own language and you're not part of the Italian community, that's absolutely fine if you can find something like that. But for me, I think there are only two or three native English-speaking people in my town. So you definitely have to adjust to the culture and understand the Italian culture, which is very, very different from a lot of cultures in different countries. I'm lucky. My background is as a consultant, and I've worked all over the world. I've worked in Asia, I've worked in America, and I've just worked in Europe, in all these different countries. So I have a multicultural background. I'm used to being thrown in a new culture, a new language, a new country, and adapting to it. And I think that's a very important thing to do. Number one, the mistake is a lot of people, they don't travel around Italy enough before they make the decision to move and buy a house. They say, I want to get my visa, I want to find a house, I'll do it remotely, I'll buy it over the internet.
They've never been there. I've talked to people that are like, I want to move to Trento. I'm like, oh, that's nice. Do you like the city? I've never been there.
Exactly.
Well, I have kids. I need to enroll them in the schools. Oh, do you look at any specific schools? I actually know nothing about the schools, but I heard that they are good. So I completely second what you just said there.
The second thing is, before people go, is that a lot of people from non-EU countries don't understand how difficult it is to get a visa. They think, oh yeah, I'm going to get to Italy. I want someone to sponsor me with a job. I'm selling my house. I'm moving to Italy. Do I need a visa? And like, they do everything the wrong way.
Yeah, you do.
So that's the second one. I think when people arrive in Italy, the number one problem is that they underestimate the Italian bureaucracy. I'm a very direct person. I'm very straight. I love helping people, but I don't make things nice. I tell the truth. And the truth is, Italian bureaucracy is like from 50 years ago, paper-based, write things in three times, make photocopies and send 10 copies and sign it on 10 different pages. And it's incredibly complex and also incredibly slow. If people expect things to happen in 3 weeks, you should multiply by a factor of five, or maybe 10, the time it takes for something to be approved, for something to happen, to get your residency, to get your permesso di soggiorno. It all takes a lot of time. And then there's, we could go on forever, driving licenses. There's all that sort of thing. So what people do wrong, Luca, is that they underestimate completely what it takes to get the residency, to get the permesso, to get settled, to get the license, to get the permits, to get the health covered, to get the tessera sanitaria, the carta di identità, all that stuff. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And that's the thing that people underestimate the most.
But can I tell you one thing, Tim? That this has been my experience. You know, when someone has a problem with an airline in my family, when someone has a problem with anyone, they ask me to write a letter. I am the, can I say, a ball breaker in chief. If someone has to file a complaint, it will be me. So I love to talk to politicians and especially city officials. Yeah. And I made it a point to go and meet a lot of the mayors and politicians who are like pretty big towns from around here.
Yeah.
And talk to them. And they also underestimate the Italian bureaucracy. Wow. I was talking to a few of the politicians here. I have never heard from any of them that they knew that, for instance, Americans and Australians come over with their driver's licenses and they have to take the test again. They were like, what? That's ridiculous. I mean, man, you guys make the laws and you don't know it. You don't know it. And the visa thing, I'm like, guys, do you understand that people must come here with a 1-year rental contract
exactly.
in a country they haven't even been to? They're like,
and
this is
that's
so stupid.
Before they get the visa, before you move to Italy, the consulate in your home country, they want to see proof that you have a 1-year rental, and it has to be registered with the Comune. None of this Airbnb stuff. It has to be a registered.
A real rental contract.
A real rental. And of course, a lot of people don't want to do that because they have to pay tax if the rental is registered with the Comune.
But also, really, how are you going to find a landlord that will give you a lease for a year? There are very few. And there's a whole bunch of scammers that would charge you $2,000 a month for a flat that really costs $500 because they know that there's a bunch of people that need it for the visa. So everyone knows that this is silly. And one thing that drives me crazy is when I read in these expat Facebook groups oh, this is the way Italy is, you know, take it or leave it. No, but even the Italian politicians understand it's demented. It is stupid. It's yeah. just that they don't do anything about it because that's not a priority. It's exactly. not a priority.
Yeah. So this is a huge red flag that you need to do that. And a lot of people are saying they managed to get a contract. I highly recommend getting an avvocato, which is the Italian word for a lawyer, or I can't remember the American word, attorney. That's the
solicitor,
one.
Solicitor.
Because then you can have like a 3-month out contract. In other words, even though the rental's for a minimum of 1 year, you can quit after 3 months. There's an opt out. So if you don't get the visa, you're paying a maximum of 3 months rent. And so it is possible to do that. But whether you're buying a house, and that's something else I'm happy to talk about, where you really do need help buying a house. It's not straightforward. But you really, really, really need a solicitor because the legal system in Italy is extremely complicated. Same with taxes. People do their own, you know, turbo tax. I can do my own tax. No way.
Not in Italy.
Or if you're in Italy, that's it.
That's really good advice. I was just opening the profile for Toscolano Maderno. And you are right. There's only 10 expats in the whole country. And now that you've left, there's one less. What will get you to move back? Would you like to move back? What would it take?
Well, I could always marry an Italian or an EU citizen and get my citizenship. But,
that's a way.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do, not now, because I'm still like, settling down and working everything out. But I think I need to get a good financial wealth advisor to advise me on this is my situation. I'm now reliant more on taking money out of my UK private pension where you have to be a UK resident. The other possibility is to do the Schengen shuffle, which is 90 days in, 90 days out. And then, you know, I can spend 6 months a year, 3 months here in England, and then 3 months in Italy, and 3 months here, and maybe 3 months in Spain or something like that. So that's my options, is either find a framework in which I'm not paying this ridiculous amount of tax for my foreign income, either through a company or some sort of entrepreneurial situation, or two, move to another EU country as my primary residence and move to Italy from there, or three, do the Schengen shuffle and just 90 days out of 180. So they're my options.
Did you apply for your permanent resident card before you left Italy? I think it's important to explain to people what it is, because I bet 99% of people don't even know it exists.
Yes, I'm happy to talk about that. This is one of my passions. You could almost call me a consultant because I love helping people with this. So basically, in Italy, if you're an EU citizen, you can come and go whenever you like. But you're actually technically not a permanent resident, but it doesn't matter. If you're not an EU citizen, then even if you have any type of visa, even if it's a 1 year or visa, as long as you extend that every year, then after 5 years of continuous residency in Italy, you're entitled to Italian permanent residency. And this is very, very important. And I strongly advise everyone to apply for it, because what it means is that if you get permanent residency, you no longer need any visa. You don't need a permesso di soggiorno. You don't have to prove your income every year. You don't have to have the rental. You don't need any of that. It's a fundamental right to live in Italy after 5 years of continuous residency. Very, very important. Now, to qualify for that, you have to make an application through the Questura, which is the police headquarters state. And to do that, you need to prove your permanent residency, and it depends on your situation. I'm actually a very special case because I'm a pre-Brexit UK citizen. I have a special pass to get permanent residency because we're entitled to it under the Brexit agreement. But normally you have to go to the post office, the Posta Italiana, and get what's called a yellow kit, kit yellow, which is a permesso di soggiorno kit for permanent residency. And you apply for that, and you need to have proof of permanent residency. In my case, it's an attestazione di soggiorno permanente, which you get from a comune. The other thing you can get from your comune, it's the anagrafi office of your local comune. You go there, and if you've been there for 5 years, they should give you this document, and that's proof that you're a permanent resident. Or the other way to do it is to get a certificato storico, which means if you've moved comune, then you get one from your current comune, and you get a certificato storico from your previous comune, and together they prove that you have 5 years of continuous residency in Italy, then that's what you take to the appointment of the questura, and you apply for a carta di soggiorno or permesso di soggiorno permanente, and it has the word permanente on it. So this, if you have an existing permesso di soggiorno, it will be replaced with a permesso di soggiorno permanente. And that's very, very important, because that gives you unlimited leave to live in Italy. Even if you leave the country for 6 months, you're still entitled to come back to Italy.
It's basically second best to being an Italian or EU citizen.
Exactly.
It's almost the same.
It's literally the only thing you don't have is voting rights. You can't vote in EU elections. There's a few other tax things, very, very small things, but it's 95% of the rights of being a citizen. The only problem is you don't have the freedom of movement rights.
Can I close off with something?
Yes.
We had a bit of a back and forth about bakeries a long time ago. You don't like Italian bakeries. I still maintain to do some decent brown bread sometimes. But more generally, stereotypes. Some of the things you said match the stereotype. The Italian bureaucracy, the Italian tax. Are there, in your opinion, stereotypes that in your own experience, the area where you lived, do not stand up to scrutiny?
Yes. So the one you mentioned, everyone loves the Italian food and they think it's the best. But to be honest, like I said, where I am, every bakery makes the most boring bread rolls, imagine. And there's two bakery shops within 500 meters of where I live. And it was interesting. When I had to leave Italy, I drove through France for 2 days, and everywhere I stopped, oh my God, the bread was so good. So some things in Italy are great. You know, olive oil's fantastic and the pasta is fantastic. But
not everything is perfect.
Not everything is the stereotype of the fantastic life in Italy. And the other thing, to be honest with you, is the monocultural aspect. In Toscolana, where I am, which is a tourist town, there must be 50 restaurants within walking distance of my house that are open in summer. And 48 of them, pasta, pizza, you know, Italian restaurant. There's one sushi place and one kebab shop. That's it. So where I come from, everywhere you've got Chinese and Thai food and Indian food, and you want a curry, you go out for a curry. Unless you live in a big city, you're not going to find that in many places in Italy as well. It is very monocultural. That's the other big shock to the system.
Things are changing a tiny bit, but slowly.
Yeah.
This is a very Australian thing to say. We spoke with Sarah Shepherd, and she moved to Fabriano. And
okay.
She's from Australia. And she said the same. Like, I love Italy. You know, the food is great, but
boring.
Yeah, it's a bit boring.
I came back to England like a month ago, and my friends all said, let's go out. We're going to eat Italian. I said,
no, please.
Well, you know, as you say, it depends a lot on the area, and things have been changing. I remember, you're not going to believe this, my mother had her first pizza when she was 16.
Wow.
I mean, people think Italian food, there's no Italian food. Even Italy started, you know, kind of becoming more national in the 70s. And I'm talking about, if you do the maths, okay, I'm not going to tell anyone how old my mother is, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago. And I remember when the first Chinese restaurant opened, it was maybe 97.
Yeah.
And people were driving like 30, yeah, 40 kilometers to go in Chinese. So slowly, slowly, things may be changing. Very quickly, traffic, does it stand up to stereotype? Are they really crazy drivers? No comment.
Yes, they are. I used to be a competition rally driver for 15 years. So my background's in motorsport. So I love driving cars. And I can't even keep up with the Italians. They are crazy. So, yeah, that's true. It is true on the motorway. They're crazy. I mean, in Australia, we have a national speed limit of 100 kilometers an hour. And if you're doing 103, you get a ticket for $100. So it is crazy. In Italy, you can drive it, you know, 140 and pass the police and they won't even care. So
you say that, but the guy that drives 140 is normally Swiss. I mean, that's a rule. That's a rule in life.
Yeah, yeah. But I do like driving in Italy. I'm passionate about driving a car, and I like sporty driving. I have a very powerful car, but I'd say the stereotypes of the driving are true. Unfortunately, where I am on Lake Garda, there's only one road on this side of the lake, and in summer, it's always slow. It's completely full of cars for all day. It's just hopeless. You can't get anywhere. So.
Yeah, that's actually a big, big deal. Maybe a couple of weeks ago, we got all the data regarding tourist congestion for the towns in Italy. And yep. Unfortunately, because many people will move and be like in April, they'll be there in April. They'll be like, oh, this is nice and quiet. I could live here. And then they go to Garda in August and it takes them an hour to do 2 miles. And unfortunately, it is one drawback of your area, I think.
Yes.
The traffic in the summer.
Yeah.
So, you know, good and bad. Last thing, what are you going to miss most now that you've left?
I'm going to miss the Lungo Laga, just walking along the lake at 6 p.m. Every day and just watching the boats and the people walking, especially in autumn and winter when it's quiet. There's a beautiful walk for 2 or 3 kilometers down to Maderno through Toscolano along the lake, and it's just beautiful and quiet and peaceful. And I think I'm going to just miss the whole physical scenery and of the lake and the sounds of the water splashing and looking across at Veneto and the mountains and Monte Baldo, which has snow on it for 9 months of the year. So that's what I'm going to miss the most.
Well, I hope the council will become sane again and for you to find an easy way to come back and pay a lot less tax than we're asking you for.
Okay, well, grazie mille. Thank you. Yes, I hope the government makes a decision
to
allow this to happen in the next 1 or 2. If they did that, I would come back immediately. If the government changed the tax regime, I would immediately come back to Italy. I really would.
Sure. As soon as a politician learns to speak English and can understand what we say in the podcast, I'm sure we'll do that. Anyway, okay. It was a pleasure to have you, Tim.
I wish
you all the best.
Okay, take care. Ciao, ciao.
That's it for this week on Magic Towns Italy. You can create a free account at magictowns.it and explore over 7,000 towns, including those offering the 7% tax scheme, as well as download dozens of expat guides. We have over 300 data points per town covering everything from property prices to schools, healthcare, distance to the amenities you care about, geological risks, and more. If you want full access to filters and unlimited searches, upgrade to Magic Towns Premium. Use the code PODCAST for 20% off an annual plan. Thanks for listening. Our next podcast will be live on Saturday at 9 a.m.